This is Jeffrey Sachs, editor of Tradition. With Passover right around the corner, our minds are on the many preparations required to join our families around the Seder table. And yet, who can forget the events of 5 years ago, when so many of us were isolated, locked down, sheltering in place during that COVID Pesach of 2020? We're pleased to share this episode of Rav Moshe Kurtz's Shoot First, Ask Questions Later podcast, examining the COVID Zoom Seder controversy. Kurtz is joined by Rabbi Yehuda Halpert, who takes us back to the pandemic halachic literature, identifies important topics that the Jewish world wrestled with during those unprecedented days, and shows how those questions are still resonant for Jewish practice in 2025. Readers of traditiononline.org know Moshe Kurtz as the author of our Unpacking the Igrot series, exploring the responsa of Rav Moshe Feinstein Zatzal. His Should First Ask Questions Later podcast can be found on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YU Torah, and all other platforms. Search for it and subscribe now. It's an engaging weekly discussion about responsa literature and other fascinating halachic curiosities. It's also hosted many of Tradition's regular authors, including yours truly. Stay tuned. Yehuda Halpert will be returning to Tradition Online right after Pesach as the guest editor of a special series on COVID plus five, in which rabbis, educators, mental health professionals, communal leaders will be sharing with us their takes on how the landscape has changed in the last half decade since the pandemic, what we got right, what we got wrong, and some of the enduring lessons and challenges of that time on the Jewish world.
Welcome to Shoot First, Ask Questions Later, where we research the response of our past and review their relevance for today. This is your host, Moshe Kurtz. Welcome, my friends, to another episode of Shoot First, Ask Questions Later. Today, we are joined by Rabbi Yehuda Halpert, and we are going to be talking about the Zoom COVID Seder, a five-year later retrospective. Rabbi Halpert currently serves as the rabbi of Congregation HaVashalom in Teaneck, New Jersey, where he's functioned as its inaugural rabbi since 2008. He's a recipient of smicha from Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan. He earned his Juris Doctorate from Columbia Law School, where he was a Harlan Fisk Stone Scholar and a B.A. Summa Cum Laude from Yeshiva College. He is also a practicing attorney and is counsel in the New York office of Debevoise & Plimpton LLP, where he is also a member of the Investment Management and Private Equity Group. Rabbi Halpert is also an adjunct professor at the Seisim School of Business, where he teaches classes in business ethics and Jewish law. Though, interestingly, despite the many legal credentials that you bring to the table, we're going to take a little bit of a different angle topically for today's episode. I know you're very interested in the impact of COVID and the halachic literature, which, as terrible and unspeakably horrible COVID was for many people, I guess there was this silver lining that there was a blossoming of halachic literature. One example I like to give, which I think we'll be looking at, is it forced Rav Herschel Schechter, whom we all value his insights, to actually put out formal tshuvos, which, I don't want another pandemic to happen, but if it did, it would mean we'd get more tshuvos from Rav Schechter, so I guess I can't complain about that. But God willing, we shouldn't necessitate it. So tell me about your interest in this. It seems to be a little bit off the beaten path of what you do professionally, and what you're working on, and what you particularly want to focus on today.
Sure. Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be on the show. I've listened to several of your podcasts in the past, and they're really, really amazing, covering great content. So it's really a privilege to be here to jump into today's topic. As you mentioned, COVID was a terrible time. It had many negative ramifications and manifestations, but there were certain interesting things that came from COVID. I think people will look back and think about the amount of halachic literature that was published in such a brief period of time, right in the midst of COVID, as each of the new halachic situations arose. The word unprecedented got thrown around so many times that it became almost a word. There was a meme, unprecedented. Everything was unprecedented. And in the reality, actually, there was tremendous halachic literature to relate back to. A lot of these things, which we thought were unprecedented, weren't really that unprecedented. But I had a specific interest in this topic. During that course, the first year of COVID, as a rav of a congregation in Teaneck that was undergoing lockdown, we were dealing with how to be a rabbi in a community that you can't speak to directly, and you had to figure out ways to speak to indirectly, via Zoom, via printing and emailing different shiurim and stuff. So, if I found that to be a very interesting dynamic relating to your community in this way. Now, 5 years later, kind of looking back, it's caused me to think back about some of those interactions. Which of those interactions actually created, positive room and positive potential? Which of those interactions were negative and are things that we should stay away from? And that's kind of been a perspective that I've been thinking about over the course of the last 5 years. This is the 5-year anniversary, and I happen to think that the Pesach Zoom Seder controversy is an interesting moment in time to look at and think about in terms of so many aspects of the overall COVID experience. So, with your permission, I'd like to kind of jump in, and I'll give the trigger warning here that people hear COVID and they're like, "Oh my God, I don't want to think about that." Well, I think we're going to have a great conversation here. If you were COVID exhausted, don't worry. This is within the context of COVID, but so much of this is well beyond COVID and kind of relates to so many different aspects of our lives that I think we can move to a point where we can learn from the COVID experience without being, COVID
So
exhausted.
I'm glad that you preemptively said that because I think there was a point in like early mid 2021 where you get all these speaking requests and people want to be scholar residents and like, okay, what are your topics? Well, COVID and this, COVID that. I'm like, if I hear another person pitch COVID as a topic, it's an automatic disqualification. So I like what you're doing, which is we're going to, of course, talk about COVID, but with an eye toward what can we learn from it 5 years later? What are the broader implications?
Yeah, no, exactly. And I'll throw in a quick pitch. I have a sefer which is coming out in just a few weeks. And one of the most difficult things that I had to deal with the publisher was getting over the hump. The sefer is titled Speaking to an Empty Shul, and it relates to the drushos and my rabbinic diary of my year of COVID. And I really had to push past the publisher and explain that even though there's tremendous COVID fatigue, I think 5 years have passed and people will be interested in that topic. So maybe we'll talk about that a little later, but that's an
Yeah, I
issue
think
which
one
has
of
been
the, to me, one of the interesting questions is which practices have remained. I made a big pitch. I forgot when I wrote the article, but a few years back, that when we learned how to streamline davening, maybe it doesn't have to be as brief and truncated as we did a Rosh Hashanah during COVID, but maybe we could learn ways to balance things and streamline and maybe have a little bit less tirchet tzibura, which actually could increase the kavanah. So that's something I like to think about. Like this is probably what you're focusing on, which is what are the broader takeaways that we could keep in place?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's actually a great segue to the Zoom Seder controversy because Zoom exploded during the times of COVID. And the question was, how is Zoom going to impact our religious interactions with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, with shul, with davening, with shiurim, with learning, with education in so many different aspects? And the Seder, which is probably, one of the, if not the highlight of the religious year, definitely in the top five of the religious year. Could somehow Zoom become a new aspect of the Seder? And we could use this from a positive perspective to bring people to our Sederim who maybe couldn't otherwise get there, could maybe somehow, incorporate other aspects of multimedia presentations into our Seder. We're always looking, my sister will use ketchup as the karpas to excite the kids. And there's always so many different things. How can we do something different? Maybe Zoom could somehow change the Seder. So let's take ourselves back a few years and just remind ourselves where we were. So basically 5 years from now, looking back 5 years, we're 2 weeks before Pesach. And obviously COVID was huge, but you think back, it's always the little things that remind you of what was going on. In my personal mind, when I think of like what made me realize that COVID was real and oh my God, my life is changing here, it wasn't the fact that all my kids were home from school. There were two things. From a personal perspective, I walked into Stop and Shop and I went to buy ice cream and the shelves were empty. There was only two containers of ice cream. For me, that was huge. It was like, holy cow, this COVID thing is real. There's no ice cream at the store. And joking aside, I was talking to a friend and he told me that in 2 weeks from now, his mother, who unfortunately was living alone in Queens, was going to participate in their Seder over the phone and that he had gotten a psak from Rav Schechter that that was okay. And that was mind-blowing because there had been so many different psukim and so many different halachic nuances that had been related to every aspect. But the fact that my friend was telling me that here, this is a musmach of a university, his father was a rabbi, and his mother is going to participate in their Seder over the phone, and he had a psak from Rav Schechter, that was like, okay, everybody, hold the phone. COVID is changing the world.
So
And
that's an
that.
interesting point. This isn't someone who's maybe becoming a Baal Tshuva. They're not really observant. So we have to figure out a Das Yachid to rely on. But these are people who are very from observant people who are very careful and meticulous about halacha. But it's a true Shas Adchak. It's extenuating circumstances. And even those who are very devout may need some leeway.
Absolutely. And that actually, that insight in terms of who the tshuva is relating to is actually a very important thing to understand in the context of the overall controversy. So let's go back a second and put that psak of Rav Schechter in the context of what was taking place at the time. The world had exploded, the halakhic world had exploded with the publication of a tshuva by the Igud Chachmei HaMa'arav, which was a group of Moroccan rabbis in Israel who published a tshuva signed by the most distinguished Moroccan rebbeim in Eretz Yisrael, that paskened that it was mutter to use Zoom for a seder on Yontif. And the shaila, the question starts off by Nishalnu al yedei Yehudi Talmid Chacham, right? So again, this question is being responded to a Talmid Chacham, and what they go through, and we're not going to go through the details of that shiur because I'd like to focus on Rav Schechter's shiur, but just to give you the context. They basically paskin that you can use Zoom, and one of the most significant factors that they're paskining is that there are members of their community who, for them, the Seder is the most important religious moment of the entire year, and the connection to grandparents and great-grandparents and relatives that is consummated the Seder night is so significant that they feel that Zoom is permissible in this context, because otherwise, because of the lockdown and other restrictions, if they don't permit Zoom, these generations, these individuals will not have a Seder. They take that idea, that significant halachic concept that you need to ensure the Mesorah and the continuity continues across generations who perhaps are not that connected. And they link it to a fact that within the Sephardic tradition, there had always been a greater leniency with respect to the issue of electricity and how electricity should be paskened in the context of Yontif. And they take those two things combined and they say, therefore, it is mutter, you can do a Zoom Seder.
So this might be a good place. Obviously, it would require many podcast episodes to cover the literature on halacha and electricity, but maybe it might be worth just giving us a little bit of background because I imagine this Zoom issue is just it's unique. There's unique factors, but I'm sure it builds upon that general controversy over halacha and electricity. So maybe just a little bit of background is in order.
Absolutely perfect. So when electricity hit the scene, as with any new technological innovation, the halachic literature, which at that time was mostly done either via letters or via these new journals that were popping up, all of a sudden started to analyze what is electricity and how should halacha relate to electricity. Obviously, in order to understand how halacha is going to relate to it, you need to understand it. You always, if you've looked into this topic at all, kind of the conversation usually starts with a psak of the Aruch HaShulchan. And the Aruch HaShulchan, and I actually recall learning the Aruch HaShulchan, and I would always look for this psak of the Aruch HaShulchan, and I could never find it inside in the Aruch HaShulchan until one day pointed out to me, someone pointed out to me, you dope, the Aruch HaShulchan didn't include it in his sefer, the Aruch HaShulchan, but there was a journal. The journal was called Beit Vad VaChachamim, and the Aruch HaShulchan writes this one paragraph letter where he relates to electricity. And just to put it into context, the Aruch HaShulchan says he believes that Haredekan Eino Ela Kipotech Petach, that based on my understanding of electricity, that it should be permissible. And then he says, but he ha'arim, in most of our cities, we don't have electricity. I've never seen electricity. I don't have electricity in my house. And therefore, I'm not exactly 100% sure what this thing is. But based on how it's been described to me, says the Aruch HaShulchan, what's the difference between taking electricity, taking a fire from one piece of, from the fireplace to the stove, into the stove to the fireplace, into the, from the fireplace to the Shabbos candles, the Yontif candles, and this electricity? But that line blows my mind, that, the Aruch HaShulchan starts with saying, I've never seen it, and it's nowhere in my city. So that's like the starting point of the Aruch HaShulchan. if you go from that one paragraph, there's this, the obviously Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach in his Sefer Me'orei Or goes into tremendous detail. He's originally published about 150, 200 pages on electricity. The Masorah that I have from my Rebbe Rabbi Kefet is that the Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach would stand on the corner and wait for some of the students from Hebrew U to walk by from the physics department, and he would share with them his analysis of the electricity and his analysis of the halacha, and they would say to him, "Yeah, that's how we understand it. That's how I understand it." And that was the Masorah that's out there. The Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach goes from you go from the Aruch HaShulchan, who never saw electricity, to Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach is analyzing it with PhD candidates in terms of the physics.
He
His
does
Sefer has
write
now been
that
republished.
also in like in Micha Shlomo, if I remember the controversy over using a microphone for Megillah reading, if that's considered your kol or not. So he disagreed ardently against Rav Moshe and his school of thought on the issue. And he writes there explicitly that if you disagree with me, clearly you have not consulted the actual not physicians, that's the wrong word, the physicists and the experts. So he was very into that. He was a real, he didn't go to YU, but he was really into Torah Mata. It's very clear.
I think the other lore that's out there is when he gave his great tshuva on opening and closing bottles on Shabbos and Yontif. They sit there. They said while he was writing the whole tshuva, he had a bottle sitting on his desk and he was looking at the bottle and opening and closing it. But that type of idea of being incredibly involved in the mitzvahs, in the mada aspect, in order to get the correct Torah interpretation, you need to get to the mada. So you go from this kind of I'll lay it out as kind of three extremes that. You have this idea that it's perhaps electricity should be mutter because it's just like an extension of fire. You have an extreme on the other end, which is the Chazon Ish, that it's an Isser Doraisa because you're building. And then in the middle, you have Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, who basically seems to say that it's an Isser Darabanan of sorts. And that's the range that's out there. Within the Mesorah of the Eidot HaMizrach, you have tshuvas, many tshuvas that say it was completely mutter, posking like similar to the Aruch HaShulchan, with different analysis. And when the Igud Chochmei HaMaariv within their tshuva, as they're getting to the place where they want to get in order to be inclusive of these people who are third or second or third generation who won't attend the Seder, they're definitely harking back to this Mesorah of Psak within the Sephardic halachic world that electricity should be mutter. I will mention, and it's hard for us to believe, that it's not only within the Sephardic world, but if you go back even 50 or 100 years within the Ashkenazic world, there are people who will tell you that in their houses on Yom Tov they turned on electricity. And I found a quote online from Rav Michael Bernstein who said that he asked the Rav whether you could turn lights on and off in Yom Tov, and the Rav would not respond. But what he said is as follows: by Rav Chaim in the house, they used to turn lights on and off on Yom Tov. And he asks again, but is it mutter? And the Rav, he quote says, he gave the exact same again answer again. And then he asked him a third time, and the Rav said, by Rav Chaim, they used to turn on lights on and off. And that was it. He said, obviously, the Rav was not going to answer. But so again, I'm not saying that so people run around and say, oh my God, Rav Chaim said that electricity is mutter. What are we doing? I'm just giving the perspective that this is one of the issues when you talk about the concretizing of halacha over the course of a period of time and whether something is mutter or aser. Besides for all the technical halachic analysis, which is super important, incredibly important, there's a notion of the authenticity and what the community feels about the idea. So there's a great sefer, a great historical book called A Tradition Authentically Orthodox, A Tradition Bound Faith in American Life by Dr. Zev Elif. Great American professor of American Jewish history. And he there discusses issues where it's not a question so much of halacha as it is the question as to whether it's deemed authentically correct or whether people can wrap their heads around it and say, is this a authentic halachic position? And I think this is a perfect example of that, where irrespective of where it comes out halachically, the community, the greater Jewish community, looked around and said, Shabbos and Yontif will not be Shabbos and Yontif if we use electricity. And you can think back about Rav Moshe's tshuva on the Shabbos clock and how we found, how we weaved in where some things we have done and some things we haven't done. But Shabbos would disappear if we were all somehow using electricity and using Zoom on Shabbos. And therefore, irrespective of the halachic analysis, the community, Pukhazi, look around, look how the community paskin, the Jewish community paskin, that electricity is aser. But so the comes along the Igud and says, yes, that's generally true, but during COVID, quote unquote, unprecedented times. What's going to happen to the community? We are going to paskin. We're going to use that halachic basis, couple it with the the sociological need, and we're going to paskin that Zoom is mutter, and that because we live in the 21st century, they paskin that in about 10 minutes. That shuva went all over the internet.
I remember, yes.
And it went wild, you know.
I mean, I was scratching my head. I'm like, who's this Igor Chachmei Amarov? I've never heard of them.
Those were the first. Who is this organization? Who are these people? But then you looked at the signatories, and these were big time. Now, you know, then after it went public and after it went viral, of the 18 signatories, a few backed out. Someone pulled out. But at the end of the day, this was the psak. You know, this is probably maybe an interesting topic for you for another day. I'm not qualified to speak on Edot HaMizrach and on the Sephardi scene. But
don't worry, our next episode is actually going to be a Sephardic rabbi talking about Pesach, which somehow I do that every year. I don't know why it's Pesach, but no, I do know.
It's the pull of the kidneys. It's the pull of the kidneys.
Yes.
So Rabbi Benny Lau, in his great work on Rav Avadya Yosef, points out, and his thesis throughout is that what Rav Avadya was doing, he was doing two things simultaneously throughout his life. He was from a perspective of outside, the Sephardic world to the Ashkenazic world, he was saying, we need to go back to our roots. We need to go back to the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch is the key, and everything goes from the Shulchan Aruch. And we need to be machzir. We need to return to that. But internally, within the Sephardic world, what Rav Avadya was doing was he was completely revolutionizing and saying, even though there was a Moroccan tradition, even though there was a Baghdad tradition, even though there was a Taimani tradition, I am going to put everything into one tradition. And what Rav Avadya, and electricity was an example of that. So if you went back to Baghdad and you went back to Morocco, electricity was mutter. Rav Avadya paskins that electricity is usser.
Right.
So again, I'm not qualified, but it seems like once Rav Avadya passed away and it was nifter, there has been this pushback from the Moroccan and the other traditions. And perhaps I'll throw it out there for someone to think about. Perhaps this relates to that a little as well, that the Igud of a Moroccan rabbi said, you know what, we've always had a tradition that electricity was mutter. And therefore, we're gonna use that as well. But again, I just throw that out there as an interesting
idea. It's interesting, right? You're saying that Rav Avadya kind of wanted to create a pan-Sephardic tradition in which all Sephardim were molded together, which usually Sephardim actually, in my experience, anecdotally don't like it when you just, you know, smush them all into and conflate them all into one category. Everyone's proud of their unique heritage from their country that they came from. So it's interesting that he did that. And now you're saying, well, now that Chacham Avadya is not here, now we can kind of like recognize the unique factors in our own traditions. So, okay, so switching from Moroccan or broader Sephardic tradition, I know you want to set that up as a foil for Rav Schechter, Rav Asher Weiss. And as I always like to say on the podcast, time flies when you're learning tshuvos. So let's jump right into it. What are the psukim and what are the unique factors at play?
Great. So let me just set up the other factor for 1 minute, which is Rav Asher Weiss. Mm-hmm. Rav Asher Weiss in a tshuva, which is four lines long, titled Arichat Leil HaSeder Be'emtzat Zoom, setting up the Seder or running and organizing a Seder via Zoom, he paskins absolutely usser. And Rav Asher Weiss, with respect to electricity, has a totally different approach. He takes the view that it's makid bepatish, it's an iser d'oraisa, irrespective, and this is across the board, having nothing to do with Zoom per se. And he says, ani gam choshesh me'od, I am very worried. Anashim tzrichim lahavin shebekol hanogeh lechashmal, electricity and technology, people need to understand when it comes to electricity and technology, kol kula yechola ligrom lepirtza gedola. Any kula can lead to an incredible breach. You can't, once you pull the curtain back, you can't go back. And Rav Asher says, absolutely usher in all circumstances. And as the greatness of Rav Asher, he explains how bad he feels for the individuals and the mental and social issues at heart. But he says, from a communal perspective, Isser d'oraisa, absolutely us.
Right. He's sympathetic, but he doesn't do anything unique over here. He says there's the inherent issues of electricity, and then there's the broader slippery slope cultural issues of once you pull the curtain back, as you said. But Rav Schechter, though, seems to not just express sympathy, but seems to give a psak that is altered based on it.
Correct. So now we jump to Rav Schechter, and I will say there's a little bit of a bait and switch here, which I think is incredibly significant in terms of the analysis, because Rav Asher Weiss, the title was Leil HaSeder Be'emtzah Zoom.
Sounds
Yigud,
like he's
they
being
also discuss Zoom.
moderate.
If you look at the title of Rav Schachter's Tshuva, the title is called Chole Bibidud, a sick person who is in quarantine. And throughout his entire Tshuva, he
Oh,
does
that's
not
good.
use the word Zoom. I would argue that that is not a coincidence. When I had the privilege of taking a class in contemporary Jewish law with Rabbi Saul Berman at Columbia,
Oh.
and we discussed different legal systems and how they work. And Rabbi Berman pointed out in the context of abortion, which obviously was always a huge topic from a constitutional law perspective, and obviously was an important topic from a Jewish law perspective, so he chose that. And he said, let's start. He said, we're going to read a responsa, and the responsa is titled Be'inyan Ritzichas Havlad, with in connection
Right.
with the murder of fetuses. So he says, based on that title, let me ask you, where do you think this is going?
Right.
So he pointed out how significant it is to read the titles. Now, I've heard other attendees on this podcast discuss the issue from an academic perspective. It's not always so clear whether the person who wrote the tshuva actually wrote the titles and wrote the intros, etc. But if you
Right.
do know that they did, then I think it's very valuable to understand that Rav Schachter is discussing Chole B'Bidud and not Zoom because he doesn't want to address Zoom, because he agrees with Rav Asher's general idea that Zoom is not a good idea, it should not be pursued, and it's not in its most obvious manifestation, it should not be used, but he wants to address the issue. And the way he does that is by discussing Chole B'Bidud. And then he takes the entire conversation and frames it not in a discussion of electricity, not in a discussion of Zoom, but in a discussion of sakana nefashos, and pikuach nefesh. And that's where there's two tremendous chidushim that Rav Schachter introduces in the first paragraph of his tshuva, which I really like to focus on.
We have a few minutes left, so let's make sure to get those points in.
So Rav Schachter starts off by pointing out that if an individual is in a mental state where there is risk that being secluded for a 72-hour, remember it was a 3-day yontif that first year of Zoom, it would be in a mental state that being secluded for 3 days would be such that there was actual sakanas nefashos, that the person might harm themselves, and whether they would harm themselves via suicide or whether they'd harm themselves via other physical actions, then it's absolutely, he says, Harei b'nei mishpachto, the family members mutarim, are permitted to pick up the phone and call them, v'chayavim, and are required to do so, because without doing that, you would have tremendous risk of sakanas nefashos. And he just paskins, but that psak is a straight pikuach nefesh psak. It's basically he is reaffirming what people are saying, that mental health is pikuach nefesh, the same way as the actual sickness of corona itself is.
Right. Though I guess the question is, are we talking about someone who has a predisposition to some kind of mental challenge, or are we talking about anyone who just feels very lonely, which is significant but might not rise to a pikuach nefesh threshold?
Correct. And that's why Rav Schachter goes, there are two levels of Rav Schachter's tshuva. The first level that I just explained, while it's significant to state it, and it was important for people to hear, is really not a chiddush, because the Gemara is replete with statements along the lines of, if somebody is going to be beruach ra, right? We say it in B'mem HaLikin every
Right.
week in Shabbos. Ruach ra is a reason to violate Shabbos, to put out the lights. So if it's a clear situation where someone has a history of mental health situations and is in an obvious situation of risk, of course it's mutter. Of course it's sakana nefashos. And it was important for people to hear that. But then the next thing he says is, what about the afilu kishein sham chashash zeh? Let's say we're not concerned that the person is going to today all of a sudden fall into complete depression, but rather the concern is lahatzil mishigaon dino. He says, even if we're concerned that this is the tip of the iceberg, that this beginning of the depression might lead to further depression and might lead down a slippery slope, that also is the din of sakanas nefashos, and therefore, again, mutarim v'chayavim. The family members need to pick up the phone and must call that family member, even if they don't have a a letter from their psychiatrist or a letter from their psychologist saying that person XYZ is suffering and has suffered for the last 10 to 15 years. But if the person is, if there's an assessment that the 72 hours over Yontif, and again, it's not just 72 hours thinking about it 5 years later. Put yourself back 5 years ago. The world had just gone into lockdown. People are scared. People are frightened. No one knows what's going to come. There is this real palpable sense, as much as there, you know, there were no vaccines, whether they work or they don't work, there were no vaccines. And at that point in time, people were
It was an existential crisis for many of us. We didn't know what was happening.
Correct. Correct. And that's, so that psak that Rav Schechter gives was, and again, that's the eye-opening psak that I started with, where my friend told me, my mother's going to call into our seder. And I was like, I know you. I know your mom. Like, what is going on here? And it's like, no, but she was, at that point, she was a widow. She was facing a seder with, she had had no human interaction for close to 2 or 3 weeks. She was facing a seder without her grandchildren, without her children, by herself. She had no history of mental health issues. But that it was going to be, she was sincerely worried about this. And we also know, and Rav Schechter mentions this, the link between mental health and physical health.
Right.
And if mental, if a decrease in a person's mental health is going to lead to a decrease in their physical health, that is also a significant halachic factor, which speaks to sakanas nefashos. And that's the second thing. Rav Schechter then quotes, he says, Re'e b'sefer nefesh harav u'b'sefer b'ikvei hatzon. These are Rav Schechter's
self-referential over there.
When we used to, in law school, you used to do the citation checking. One of the things you were always warned about was if the writer cite something, make sure that they're not citing themselves. And sometimes people would be creative that they would cite two or three.
So I should defend, I guess, my sort of accusation over here, because I know that these tshuvas were edited by Rav Schechter and Rav Ari Leibowitz, I believe. So it's possible they added those citations in.
I think that's right. I think that's right. And actually, but I will mention that the self-citation here, I think, is very significant, because to prove this point about what we'll call indirect mental health considerations, not black and white mental health considerations, there is a vast halakhic literature on this topic. So the Chasam Sofer already many hundreds of years ago discussed the issue of a child who needed to be institutionalized but would have to eat not kosher food there. Yeah. There, and you can go back to many sources in the Gemara in Tanis, the Gemara in Brachos, that discusses this indirect linkage. Rav Schechter chose not to go in that direction. He could have obviously written encyclopedic tomes on all of those issues. Instead, he cites Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. He cites Rav Chaim, and he says that the kol cholesh shaharofim choshishim shema yitchazek chala b'meshach hayom tov. Any individual who were concerned that the sickness, the mental health issues, will continue and be exasperated over the course of Yontif, matzavo lihiot safek sakana, and his matzav is a safek of sakana. I think what he's doing here, and putting myself in the shoes of a rabbi who was answering questions at that point in time, obviously the halachic basis was significant, but people were looking for reassurance that they were staying within the Mesorah.
Right.
And here you are, you're telling somebody who's never done, you know, anything on Pesach to pick up the phone and call. They needed reassurance that this was, as we started, authentic, that this was legitimate. So if Schechter says to the rabbis, who I think you had on Rabbi Leibowitz a few weeks back, who explained that Rav Schechter was getting these questions over and over and over and over again from all these different pulpit rabbis, which is why he finally put it in print. What Rav Schechter was doing is saying, when you call your congregant and say, listen, you can pick up the phone and call, you are consistent with the Rav, and you are consistent with Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. This is a psak, because that congregant is not interested in the Ksam Sofer, he's not interested in the Dibrei Uzil, he's not interested in the 27th. He wants to know that he's within the Mesorah. Yeah. And that's where Rav Schechter chooses to go this way. And it is incredibly important for the rabbis to be able to say, I spoke to Rav Schechter and he quoted Rav Chaim, and you should pick up the phone. You must pick up the phone.
Right, right. You're going to quote like some obscure source that you found in Beis Yosef somewhere. Like, no one's going to be like, oh, okay, that's some random rabbi I'm not familiar with. But anyone who's ever, you know, gone to yeshiva day school, high school education, you hear Reb Chaim, that's like the epitome of frumkeit, essentially. So if Reb Chaim says it, I'm not going to be better than Reb Chaim. So just with our 2 minutes left, so I like the distinction between how Rav Usher's tshuva is entitled about, it's about Zoom, it's about the technology. This tshuva is about the individual. Chas v'shalom, not to say that Rav Usher doesn't feel the pain of the individuals. He clearly expresses that. But the subject is about the person who might have mental health challenges. And the technology is just something that has to be dealt with as one of the factors. So what is the five-year takeaway for us now?
So there are so many five-year takeaways, but I'm going to jump in. One five-year takeaway is the understanding of our community and the beginning of destigmatization of mental health considerations and mental health considerations from a halachic perspective. And I'm going to try to prove that a little by showing the opposite. But during Corona or during COVID, we began to understand how significant mental health was across the board, from a physical perspective and qua mental health itself. And halacha and education, our schools began to take that seriously. And there became a shift from the old school view of, and I hope I'm not offending anybody by saying this, but kind of like this idea of back in the day, we walked to school uphill in the snow,
right?
Both ways. You know, we were tough back then. And you people, this is the weakest generation. You people are weak. And that's why, et cetera, to hold the phone. What you are doing there is you are reaffirming a stereotype that mental health situations are not real. Mm. And that we, at for a moment in time, and I wish we had done more of it, but I think it's a point in time where we're going forward. For a moment in time, we said, you know what? Mental health considerations are significant. They've always been viewed as significant within the halakhic literature. We just didn't have this term, the terminology. Right. We had ruach ra, we always talk about chole, but it's hard to see the chole of a mental health from a mental health perspective. So I think the five-year takeaway in this tshuva of Rav Schechter, where he distinguishes between, quote unquote, where you see it in front of you, where the person is standing on the George Washington Bridge versus someone who's just at home, but is really headed in that direction, that's just as significant as somebody who's fundamentally sick. I'll end off with this idea, which I think is important because it shows where we've come, but still that we have far to go. I don't know if I have another 90 seconds.
Yeah. Go for it.
60 seconds. So Rav Yoel Katan in the back of the Maayan, which is a publication put out by Shalavim, by Machon Shlomo Omen, which is affiliated with Shalavim, he does quick summaries of different books that have come out. And he discusses a sefer called Avnei Derech, Chelek Esrim, it's Shelos Etshuvos in Israel. It's 20 volumes. We have no idea if its existence in the U.S., but it's 20 volumes. And the Rav there quotes a tshuva of a woman who had a terrible incident in the mikvah. And because of that, she doesn't want to go back to the mikvah, and she wants to be tovel in a yam, in the Kinneret, etc. Very complicated halakhic topic. But there's a footnote there by a Rav who says, I don't understand this whole analysis. The woman is a little scared of going to the mikveh, and because of that, we're going to do all these different halakhic things. Back in the day, people were strong, and they never would have taken this into account, and I can't believe you're even dealing with this issue. And the author of the Avnei Derech, to his credit, says, that's old school thinking, man. We're past that. This is a real halakhic issue. This woman's mental health is not because she's weak. This is a mental health consideration, and it needs to be taken into account into the halakhic literature. So if we go back a few minutes to the beginning of our conversation, you had started asking the question, you know, what is your takeaway 5 years later? What have we learned? What is significant to take away from this? And I think this idea of the emphasis and focus on mental health and the destigmatization of the notion that people suffering with mental health need to be considered from a full framework of the halakhic context, and not just the extreme case where somebody is, Chas v'shalom, contemplating serious self-harm, but the idea that mental health considerations throughout the spectrum are significant and need to be taken into account, can't be pushed away as just, oh, that's old school thinking, that's weak, that's the way it was. But rather, as Rav Schechter does, understand that there are these two levels. There's the clear and present danger of sakanas nefashos, but there's also the idea that mental health situations can spiral. And when you begin to go down that road, And if it's isolation for 24, 48, or 72 hours, that can spiral into something that takes weeks and months and eventually turns into what we, Rahmanul Islam, a terrible situation. So perhaps one of the takeaways from COVID is that we should continue to focus on mental health in all of its manifestations, in the schools, in the shuls, in the community. And by destigmatizing this topic and bringing it to the fore, we can really benefit our community at large, and make sure that halacha is properly taking these issues into consideration.
That is a really important message that I think has emerged from much of the literature and Rav Schechter in particular. And just, Rabbi Halpert, remind us again. So you said you have a sefer coming out on this general topic. What's the name of it? Where can we look out for it? If there is a link available already, I'm happy to put it in the show notes. So let our listeners know where we can find out more of your Torah.
Sure. So thank you so much. So the sefer which is coming out is called Speaking to an Empty Shul. Timeless Lessons from Unprecedented Times. It's being published by Mosaica Press. The link and will be available in just a week or two. It is literally right now on a slow boat from China. The books are on the boat from China.
Hopefully oh, wow. Mine came from Eretz Yisrael. They must have found a different, I guess it's cheaper in China. That makes sense.
Cheaper in China, but hopefully I won't get hit with the tariffs as they, come into the port. But I'd like to emphasize that although the framework of the Sefer is Corona, and it's definitely a rabbi's diary of that first year of Corona, I would not call it a Corona Sefer. It's not 52 drushas regarding Corona. What it does is it takes us through that first year, which was an incredibly variant and fascinating and difficult and complicated year in terms of Black Lives Matter, in terms of the first Trump election, the Capitol riots, the lockdowns, the emergence from lockdowns. And there were so many different fascinating communal issues that occurred during the course of that year. And that's what I try to do during the Sefer, because obviously I wasn't giving drushas in shul. So instead, what I did was I was emailing and WhatsApping these drushas. And actually, this kind of quirky thing that occurs, I was sending voice notes. To the community, and I found the voice notes 3 or 4 years later. Within the Sefer, you can link. There's a QR code to the voice note, and if you're really interested, you can compare the written drasha to the oral drasha. And Professor Mark Saperstein, in his various sparim on sermons during time of war, sermons during the last, he has fascinating books. He discusses what a sermon is versus what a lecture is versus what a shiur is, and a written. You can never really compare the written product to the oral product. A lot of times, you know, you don't have, you know, the facial expression, the hands, how you play off the audience. So that's a very, you know, if you're a slight history buff and you're interested in that, that's interesting. I'll also say, just throw it out there for those people who are collecting Corona literature within the Sefer, I include all of the RC. I was privileged to be a member of the RCBC, Rabbinical Council of Bergen County, which was the first rabbinic organization that quote unquote shut down when Corona started. And I have all of the letters and a lot of the correspondence between the RCBC and the organizations in the back of the Sefer as exhibits, because I thought it was important historically to record that, those conversations and that analysis and those public proclamations.
I think I still remember it was probably the forward or something like that that said, Rabbis and Tina cancel Shabbos.
Yes.
Leave it to them to spin it that way.
By the way, and again, it's hard to put yourself back there, but when we were having that conversation that night, that's what we were concerned about. That kind of like Rav Usher Weiss with the you're gonna allow Zoom. We were like, what do you mean we're canceling Shabbos? Are we gonna cancel Shabbos for the snow? Are we gonna lock down for this? These were real considerations, because this was before New Jersey lockdown. This was before lockdowns were across the country. It was a novel idea, but as Rabbi Sabalowski said at the time, and it's true, it's absolutely true. RCBC saved lives that Shabbos. RCBC absolutely saved lives by locking down that Shabbos, and it's important to keep that in the public
true.
Record.
Definitely true. My ha'ar was to all of the social media, Twitter, Facebook warriors who were strongly, leading the charge to tell people not to go to shul during COVID. I always thought to myself, halavai, once COVID's over, with the same passion and vigor, they'll be encouraging people to come back to daven at shul every day. I'm yet to see that, but we can only hope. Rabbi Halpert,
on that point, I'll actually give one last plug, which is that on the week of April 21st, Tradition Online and the Tradition Podcast will be holding, there'll be 4 days. Each day there'll be two or three essays which will be dropped online, and then there's going to be a podcast. And one of the discussions of the essays and the podcast is, 5 years later, religiously, have people come back to shul? Have people with the same vigor that we left shul come back to shul? What other aspects of the community have changed? What should have changed and didn't change? And what perhaps has changed? So these are topics I think... I know people, there's a COVID fatigue, but once you get past that, these are topics that our community should be talking about. And I think there's tremendous there's tremendous content here
And
for people
I'm
who
glad you gave
can.
a shout out to Rabbi Jeffrey Sachs and our friends at Tradition, and they're doing amazing work there as well. I work with them, so I guess I'm a little bit biased on that, not on the podcast then, but it's excellent stuff. So I'm glad you're spreading the Torah. And I think with that, we'll end. Rabbi Halpert, I'm looking forward to your Sefer coming out, and I think it'll be remarkable from a halachic and really from a historical standpoint. So I encourage our listeners, it might be too early to put it in the show notes, but certainly check out Mosaica, check out Amazon, wherever it can be found. Thank you so much, Rabbi Halpert, for your time and expertise.
Thank you so much, Rabbi Kurtz. Thank you for this initiative of the Shoot First podcast. It's a great, great benefit and value to the power community.
Thank you so much. Thank you for listening to Shoot First, Ask Questions Later. If you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to rate us, subscribe, and leave a review. If you'd like to submit a letter to the editor, sponsor an episode, or just have a general inquiry, please email me at mitchellmkurtz@gmail.com. This is Moshe Kurtz, and I look forward to learning with you next time on Shoot First, Ask Questions Later.